Our conversation starter is here for Pope. Deceptively clever irrigation made right here in Australia. Pope's Drip Ease will make it a breeze. We witnessed a taking out the trash classic last night, JJ, in terms of timing. Yes. 8:25 p.m. the inbox.
Absolute bugbear in the journalism world, isn't it?
All eyes on Kyrgios, all eyes on the women's ashes and anything else he might be doing. And Collingwood released a small statement saying Jordan Ngoi will be welcomed back to the club today. It's older than time, the old strategic release, but that's probably a conversation for another time. The bare bones of this is that Jordan Ngoi is back at training today for the Pies. They've reached an agreement, Jordan Ngoi's legal team and US prosecutors. The Collingwood Footy Club said the board had considered an agreement on a conclusion to the legal matter in the US, which was reached late yesterday. So as a result of this in-principle resolution and based on further undertakings given by Jordan to the club, Collingwood says it has reinstated Ngoi to its AFL program. But he's doing so with two club-imposed requirements, JJ. These are a commitment to permanent part-time work with the Salvation Army and acceptance of continuing and further support off-field and full cooperation with health professionals providing such support. Jeff Brown, the president, said, Jordan is a Collingwood player. Like all our players, he'll be supported with everything that we have. We want our people, including those who make mistakes, to know what side by side means. So basically what's happened is Jordan Ngoi's pleaded guilty to a second degree harassment violation. He's agreed to that order to commit to a corrective program in Australia, which is in part the Salvation Army and the off-field requirements. And all other charges are dropped. The matter is resolved, Collingwood says, because a second degree harassment violation will not result in a criminal conviction. And this is all set to be ratified at a court hearing on January 28th over there in New York. So Graham Wright said the club didn't take this episode lightly, but how do Collingwood supporters feel about this? 1-300-736-736. How many chances does one player get? 1-300-736-736. He's out of contract at the end of the year. Does he stay long term? And just how do Collingwood approach it and how do people feel about it?
It's very interesting from the football front because it can be all about footy now, can't it? It's the train because he won't be... You wouldn't imagine he's physically up to speed with the rest of his teammates because he hasn't been inside an AFL environment. So firstly, he's got to get up to speed and get his conditioning where it needs to be, which has been questioned by people at different stages, his conditioning and his physical application. So see where that gets to, and then he'll be forensically analysed his performance.
Oh yeah, it'll be heavily scrutinised.
Former coach will probably be asked and tasked weekly with doing so, and then Fireball Fridays will have him in the gun a few times, Kane and Kingy. But that's just the position that he's in. He's a player who plays for a big club. He's out of contract. He's had massive. Was it North Melbourne that he turned down the monster deal?
Yep, $1 million a season.
So I guess that's the query, isn't it? Will Collingwood be able to and willing to offer him a long-term and large lucrative deal?
Surely it wouldn't be long-term.
Well, someone else probably will.
So this is the thing. I think he's more likely to stay unless he wants to leave. I can't see a scenario where they might think, well, we'll trade him at the end of the season. We'll fatten up the cow and then take it to market. If the cow fattens, I think they might just say, we better just keep the cow because this might bite us on the
bump. Depends how much it costs you, though. Depends how much it costs you.
Literally cost you or cost you off-field?
No.
Is it an ongoing ticking time bomb?
No. Money. Say, let's hope that he's matured and this has taught him a lesson, and I think would have to teach you a lesson considering what he's gone through. But
pennies dropped, you reckon?
Oh, I'm hoping so.
Renee's in Heidelberg. Welcome to you, Renee.
Good morning, gentlemen. Happy New Year.
And to you.
Couple of things. The first thing on Jordan. Look, I believe I'm a Legends member, and I think this is really his very last chance. I think when it happened, most Collingwood supporters and members were like, you know, like the big, oh no, you know, this again. But, you know, Jordan is a young man, and he's done some silly things, but let's hope that he can, you know, he can really give it back to the club and behave himself a little bit. Because there's no doubting his talent, you know, but I think this is his last chance.
Renee, would, if someone comes to the party, if Jordan plays good footy this year and plays to the standard that we've seen at different stages, wins a few games off his own boot, if someone comes to the party with a long-term deal, would you be willing, as a Collingwood fan, to give him a 3 or 4 year deal, or would you be strictly saying, nah, we're keeping this guy to 1 and 2 years at a time?
No, no. I think in today's football, the terms, you know, I guess Brody's contract, you know, being 7 years was quite long. But, look, you wouldn't want... It's a real hard one because it's a real toss of the coin, because do you take faith and trust that he's going to grow up and learn and show some love back to Collingwood and show them what he means? Look, I think 3 to 4 years is probably okay, but with very strict contract specifications.
Yep.
I think that you wouldn't want to let a talent like Geordie go, but then you don't want a player like that that's giving a bad name to the football club. You know, you've got to really balance that out a little bit. So, I mean, I'm glad that they've reinstated him. I'd be silly not to be, but I'm not really happy with the behaviour.
Not certain, yeah. All right. Watch this space, won't we?
Good on you, Renee. He's a restricted free agent too, by the way, in terms of his status at the end of the year.
So they can match.
They can match.
Can keep him.
But, so it's not a trade per se, but they have the decision to make. Should a whopper come from another club, such as an all... And that's another conversation in itself. Will... How closely will clubs, rival clubs, be watching him this year to see whether they can lure him out with a big money deal? Or has this been the straw that's broken the camel's back for them? That's a whole other conversation. David's in Craigieburn. Welcome, David. Yeah, there, Davo.
Yeah, mate. You got me?
Gotcha.
All right. I'm an Essendon supporter, so what happens to Collingwood, I laugh at. But anyway, as far as DeGoey goes, mate, I reckon he's got to have another chance. Like, their kids on big dollars, and I don't think they know what to do with it. But I have fun.
Nah, it's not an excuse. Having lived this system, David, now I know and understand everyone's different and come from different backgrounds, but we get endless amounts of education on how to act and what the right and wrong things are to do in the community. So, I don't think you can just say he's a young man and he's got plenty of money and you're bound to make mistakes. People will make mistakes, but you can't just excuse them of that every time. You need to be held to account for your own actions.
What will it be like from going back in there, do you think?
Oh, footy clubs are very...
they just move
very
on.
Much, yeah. Once you're in, when you're in the circle and the stuff that's happening on the periphery doesn't matter. It'll just... His teammates will just say to him, we just want you to be the best version of number two that we can possibly get.
Because there's some strong personalities in there. Like Brody Grundy wasn't scared to depart from the party script.
There'll be a couple. The Brodies are strong, and that's why I throw him up as a potential captain, because he is strong. You know, Scotty Pennerby I would imagine Scott would sit down with him and just say, you know, look, we've done this a few times. We've done this dance a few times, but, you know, really hone in and just lock into footy. Just be a 24/7 footballer and see where that takes you. You never know.
If he wasn't Jordan DeGoey and he was Jordan Joe Bloggs, let's call a spade, it'd be a totally different kettle of fish.
Yeah, no doubt. Be gone.
And that therefore complicates things. It always does.
That's just how it is, isn't it?
Dave's text in just shows Collingwood have not changed. I follow the Western Bulldogs and the club had enough of Jake Stringer's rubbish. Collingwood had a chance to show the footy world they won't put up with a trash attitude. But this, though, the irony was Jordan DeGoey was in the US doing extra training ahead of the preseason.
Yeah. And there's a business element to this. Jake Stringer was... the Dogs were well compensated for Stringer, were they not?
No, it was a couple of picks in the 20s.
But they got, well, they, you know,
it was okay.
Some decent picks.
It would be a par on the golf course, I reckon.
Where at least you're getting something in return. You just cut DeGoey and get nothing for him. So there's a level of business where you need to actually say, well, even if we do decide to move this guy on, we'd want to get something back in return.
Collingwood last chance is like John Farnham's final tour. My take, says Stephen Sunbury, is the bloke doesn't learn and he's cultural poison. I'd love Josh Jenkins' view on culture impacts and risks. You didn't really, thinking back to your time at Adelaide, you didn't have a player who...
No, we had a very incredibly good record with with all these sorts of
the
things.
The cats with a
It was
stone.
Spoken about a lot. It was spoken about a lot about how to act, how to behave. You know, this is a, yeah, you know, we went into the detail of, you know, we've got 4 days off. This is a six drink limit. Don't have more than six drinks. You know, we've got a large training block ahead of us, or we've got 6 day breaks. We're not going to drink this weekend because we've got a 6 day break. We went right into the detail. So the rules were clear, and there was never any grey area, because that's what young people will look for. Oh, I wasn't sure. I thought going out was all right. And obviously we know what happens when you go out and get on the drink, bad things happen. So perhaps Collingwood need to really tighten the screws in that sense and make it almost impossible for players to muck up.
Collingwood, new admin, not much changes. He's got off way too lightly again. That's off the text. And Darren's asking a question for the year in terms of list management approach from the Pies. Would Collingwood be better off offering Ben King the long deal and the money and having Jordan Ngoi make it possible by moving him on, letting him go? That's a question that...
You'd do that. You do that. If Jordan Ngoi was a model citizen, you'd do that deal, wouldn't you? Ben King... Do that deal in a blink.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's going to be an interesting year for him, isn't it? He's going to be doing part-time work with the Salvation Army permanently until further notice. He's got, the off-field stuff to contend with in terms of, the counsellors or the health professionals and all that sort of stuff as well that he will have to adhere to that will be ratified in a courtroom on January 8 over there in New York. So he gets a last chance, we're told, and it is going to be a massive year for Jordan Ngoi. Actually, the Collingwood Chief Executive, Mark Anderson, said of Jordan Ngoi, his behaviour more generally, the club had spoken to Jordan Ngoi about it, and he recognises that change is necessary. Mark Anderson went on to say he also understands that his actions from here will need to be evidence of that change. The responsibility to rebuild trust is his to carry, and he fully understands the consequences of any future issue. So it absolutely reads as last chance saloon sort of stuff, doesn't it? So we'll see how it plays out from here. His first day back on the job is today.
Yeah, it'll have a little bit of anxiety and a few butterflies, you'd think. You're not normal if you wouldn't.
And I wonder how far behind the rest of the group he is.
That'll be interesting to see. I'm sure there'll be cameras and eyes down there checking out the Pies. Very open facility, unlike ours. We used to lock the joint up, but you can get down there and have a look at him. So it'll be interesting.
Dan says the reality is that if he was number 35 on the list, he'd be sacked by now by the club. Garbage double standards as always.
Yeah, that text is correct, but just the way.
That's the way of the world, not just footy clubs, I reckon. Really, has he ever lived up to the hype, asks this texter. Well, I thought he showed some real signs last season, to be honest, that he was just about ready to take flight on a consistent basis anyway, and then we had this over in New York. So never good timing for something like that, but that was a real kick in the teeth for the club and the supporter group. So that's Jordan Ngoi. We'll park some ongoing texts for him the longer the show goes on. I want to talk about testing at the Australian Open as well at some point in the near future as well, JJ. Just voluntary, just optional.
Leaving themselves open to a disaster, aren't they?
They are a bit. So we might break that down because Craig Tolley did speak yesterday and several players have spoken out as well. And don't forget, Bernie Tomic started it all. He started it all courtside with the umpire.
He knew.
Nostradamus. He called it. He said, how can they not be doing PCR testing? Voluntary testing in their rooms with rapid antigen testing. And sure enough, he tested positive a couple of days later. So we'll get into that as well after this break. We're on a fun Friday mission here at Summer Breakfast. Sam Edmund, Josh Jenkins with you. Just a couple of work experience lads trying to get through the week. So
knobs.
Bear with us. We'll be back after this.
Kogan, make the switch to a great value credit card. Visit koganmoney.com.au. Smarter, quieter, safer. Garage doors redefined. Discover more at 4ddoors.com.au. Summer Breakfast on SEN.
Welcome back. Great to have your company on a Friday morning. JJ cannot get a rapid antigen test for the life of me. He went to two or three, four venues yesterday, pharmacies.
Get on a rookie list of an AFL club, you'll get one.
Exactly. Exactly.
Through 1,000 a day.
Picked up in the preseason supplemental selection period. I get one a day. We're here for Pope's Drippers, which makes drip irrigation a breeze. Now, I talk about the rats because it became clear yesterday via various players. In fact, the day before by Alexander Zverev and Garbine Muguruza as well. Bernie Tomic before them. They've been among the players anyway to draw attention to the lack of, I guess, rigour in testing for COVID-19 at the tournament, which is effectively an honesty policy. Only compulsory if players have symptoms. So they've got them in either in the hotel room or at Melbourne Park. They're offered one a day, the players. And it's on them to do the test, A, to report if it's positive, B, and then to do a PCR test. Yeah. And I tell you, Alexander Zverev said he thought there were players definitely playing this year with COVID. He said that on the record.
Gee, they're setting themselves up for a big...
Well, you think about it, right?
A big issue, a semi or a... Oh.
Think about it. So if you say you've got symptoms and you undertake a test and you're positive, you're out of the tournament. Now, we're getting into the third round now. They're playing for a fourth round berth worth nearly $330,000. For a lower ranked player, that is absolutely enormous.
Enormous.
That's a life, that's a season changer at a minimum. So we're relying on players like, I guess, citizens to do the right thing. Some are testing daily, some are testing once a week, I was reading, and I'm sure some are doing nothing. So you compare that to the footy at the moment, like you mentioned, one a day for every player in the
season.
And they're not even, we're 2 months from the start of the season.
I mean,
that's why we can't get a test.
You mentioned, you know, a young or developing player, a player who doesn't make a lot of money, third, fourth round, quarterfinals, how much money that's worth. Put yourself in their shoes. You'd like to think you do the right thing. But if the difference is play this game, I've got a bit of a sniffle and a sore throat, which probably means I may have COVID. But you know what? I actually feel all right. And if I go and report myself and test positive, I'm just completely no chance of $300,000, or I might just press on and infect a few. It sounds like they're just setting themselves up for a.
I think it was Hugo Humbert, the Frenchman. Hugo.
Hugo
Humbert, who was eliminated, and Humbert, do you like that? And tested positive the next day, I think, or 2 days later. So, anyway, I mentioned Craig Tiley, the tournament director, CEO of Tennis Australia. He spoke for one of the few occasions yesterday, and he was asked about clarifying the coronavirus protocols.
Right throughout the year, the players have been travelling around the world and there's been protocols that they've been following to do that. Then working closely with the women's tour and with the men's tour, we came up with a set of protocols that were more rigorous than what they have normally during their week in, week out travels. And coming into Australia, every single player had to do a test. Then between day 5 and 7, they had to do a test. We have testing clinics set up both at the hotel and here. On top of that, there's mandatory symptomatic testing. And every single player is provided each day with an antigen kit that they can pick up either at the hotel or here on site. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, that's really the program that we've had going. And so far, it's worked well and it's been successful. And we're in a position where, you know, this is, as I said, day 4, and we're going to go into another 10 days of some great tennis. But continuing with not only that testing program, but also the physical distancing, the wearing of masks. You can see in the player area, all the players have masks on, and then constantly reminding them around hygiene and how they stay safe, and not only keep themselves safe, but ensure that we keep Victorians safe, because that's been our goal from the beginning.
That was Craig Tiley with Channel 9 yesterday. Dav's just texting JJ. What's the point of testing if you don't have symptoms? Well, Craig Tiley used the phrase mandatory symptomatic testing. Well, only the players know if they've got symptoms or not. So it's a strange approach. If you're saying you don't have symptoms, you're not testing. And as you say, if you have a little sniffle or a sore throat, for $330,000, I'm willing to bet you're happy to go out there and roll the dice. We're relying on players to do
suffered
the right
enough,
thing.
Suffered enough the Australian Open, hasn't it, with the Novak issues leading into the tournament. Now we...
It's complicating.
Leaving ourselves open to a forfeited semi-final. Imagine that.
Oh, no. Billy's in Ascot Vale. Welcome to you, Bill.
Yeah, morning, guys. Yeah, just regarding these tests, guys, I know what you're saying, that I know they don't want to lose this money by missing out, but aren't they going to be playing with... breathing problems, because most people are saying that they're really struggling after they've got COVID, that they can't get their breath. Nearly everyone that's bombed out, the top seeds are all sort of complaining that they had COVID and they've still got the after effects. So even if they do play, they're probably going to lose anyway because they're not really 100% fit.
Perhaps, Billy, perhaps. I mean, I'm no health expert, that's for sure. And I guess it affects every player differently as well, and every person differently is what we hear. But, yeah, certainly Bernie Tomic for his part. That's really
I think the
only...
issue is more the fact that they'll be
mingling
interacting with people.
They'll be in the players' lounge and the warm-up area and the cafes and such, shaking hands.
Umpire and...
You guys are kidding yourself if you think Tomic ever had COVID. He was on a plane the day after you reported it. Well, it's been widely reported that he did test positive for COVID-19, but that's okay. Ridiculous policy, again. It's in the Australian Open, taking rules into their own hands, should be mandatory. Look at Victoria at the moment. That's from Locke off the text. Wow. Okay. So 7:30 news is coming up. Brett Phillips will join us anyway when it comes to all things tennis, on court anyway, the latest from the Australian Open. Looking forward to chatting with BP about Chris O'Connell. What a great story he has been. Bryce Cotton, the best basketballer in Australia. All things Wildcats. He plays game number 150 this Saturday. We'll speak to Bryce at around 8:20. And Libby Birch as well, ahead of their clash against the Saints tomorrow afternoon. She's up at 8 o'clock, the Melbourne AFLW star. John's asking, why don't officials check the players' rapid antigen test before their match? Well, that's what we're saying, John. It wouldn't be difficult to do. But I guess it comes back as well to keeping the players on side, for lack of a better phrase. I mean, they're a major international tournament at the end of the day. They want the players to be having a good time. They want it to be the happy slam.
You've got one of the four grand slams.
Prize money becomes a part of it as well. I don't know. They're just, particularly with the pointy end of the draw, they're always about keeping the players happy.
Bowing to the players.
Well, yeah, that's a strong phrase, but that's sort of where I'm going. And that seems to be the way with tennis, doesn't it? That's just.
I wouldn't be feeling the need to bow or to bend. I've got the Australian Open. They're going to turn up for it.